Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Remembering the world's worst nuclear disaster as the people nearby the former Soviet power plant of Chernobyl still try to pick up the pieces of their lives. And world-renowned for City of Joy and his movie on Mother Teresa, best-selling author Dominique Lapierre offers an example of courage and hope in a true life tale of human suffering in India. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Those are the top stories today you'll be hearing over the next half hour. It was on April 26, 1986, when an explosion at the Soviet nuclear power station in Chernobyl caused the world's worst ever nuclear disaster. Nobody knows for sure how many people will die as a result of the radiation fallout, with estimates ranging from 4,000 to more than 93,000. But the enormous social, ecological, and economic consequences of the disaster are continuing to resonate. Although Chernobyl is located in Ukraine, it was neighboring Belarus, only 7 kilometers away, that received 70% of the radiation fallout. Belarus's ambassador to Italy, Alexei Skripko, told Susie Hodges, "We all have many lessons to learn from the disaster."
In 1986, after 40 years of ideological struggle between the East and the West, between the nuclear powers and superpowers, when all of the military and heads of government were thinking how to avoid nuclear disaster, they were incapable of confronting a man-made nuclear disaster of the dimensions of 100 bombs of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, like the Chernobyl disaster was. We have to reflect on this and say to us that nuclear energy can only be used for peaceful purposes, and of course there is no room for further mistakes, like the mistake that took place on the 26th of April. And the second lesson, I think, is a humanitarian one. When we are all united, when all of the peoples of the world are united to overcome the consequences of Chernobyl, and I would like to underline that not only Belarus, Russia and Ukraine were under the influence of this disaster, but other 22 countries of Europe, when we are all united in efforts to overcome this tragic disaster, it not only fortifies the national capacity, but also gives great hope to the people that have been devastated by this disaster.
How do people in Belarus feel about nuclear energy in the light of the Chernobyl disaster? Because many maintain that it turned the tide of public opinion throughout the world against nuclear energy because of the risks or the dangers, as we saw.
Yes, for us it was, a double tragedy because first and foremost, Belarus has never had nor has any nuclear power plant. And 70% of the nuclear fallout due to the rose of the wind, as we say, fell on our territory. Of course, it created a massive, massive reflection in the people of our country. First and foremost, because for almost 3 days, the Soviet leadership did not tell its people the real results of this nuclear disaster. I should like to stress that this was one of the causes of the national independence of Belarus, because the people were so much devastated by the way they were treated, because for 3 days in a row, they went out in the streets, they went for their needs, and nobody understood how those after effects could have influenced their lives. And of course, after this, any approaches to construct nuclear power plants in Belarus and in the vicinity of our country were considered to be out of the question.
How much, in fact, of Belarus still remains heavily contaminated as a result of the disaster?
Belarus suffered the most during that disaster. As I've said, 70% of the nuclear fallout precipitated on our territory. More than 20% of the territory was withdrawn from agricultural use. More than 2 million people, in one measure or another, suffered. One third of Belarusians have problems with thyroid cancer. So the population still suffers daily.
And so babies are still being born with problems that can be attributed to the Chernobyl disaster.
Yes, there are severe problems, oncological problems. There are problems with mutations. So basically, the gene fund of the nation has been altered. And we are very much now hoping to unite efforts with other countries to work specifically on the medical, biological problems that have been created by the disaster.
And how many people were evacuated and how many are still, in fact, being unable to return to their homes?
After the fallout, when the major territories that were the most affected, more than 137,000 people were immediately evacuated. There is a zone of complete devastation around 30 kilometers around the nuclear station. It is absolutely incredible to understand how devastated they are and they were because they have lost anything. They went from their houses without taking anything. Now, approximately 500,000 people still live in the contaminated areas, mostly people of old age. For them, it is really difficult to prognose the effects of radiation because they say, you know, you cannot see this, you cannot touch it, you cannot feel it. So I would rather remain on the soil of my relatives. I would preserve my house and have some farmyard. If it come, I will die here, but I wouldn't move, even if the government suggests for them to move. And this has created a psychological trauma because, you know, if you take those regions and we are now working effectively for the sustainable development of those regions, the percentage of people that are over 65, 70 years is more than half. And in those regions, unfortunately, the number of people who die each year is about two times as much as those who are born there.
How important a role has the Catholic Church played in helping to care for those who are affected by the Chernobyl disaster?
It has been very effective, and I would like to thank the Vatican, all of the organizations that are linked to the Vatican that have been very much helpful to us. We appreciate even more, not only some material humanitarian assistance, but first and foremost, the attitude of simple people, Catholics. And you know, Belarus is a multi-ethnic country. We have 14% of Catholics. That is more than 1,400,000 people. We have witnessed that more than 400,000 Belarusian kids have been rehabilitated here. And the church on the regional level, on the city level, on the village level, let's say, was very active to house our children, to provide for them medical treatment. And there have been numerous very important operations for children diagnosed with cancer. I think this psychological trauma, this fear of future, what future will bring to Belarus, that I think will be with us for a long, long time. It is in our DNA.
Belarus's ambassador to Italy, Alexei Skripko. There are times that I think I'm one of the luckiest people in the world to have two healthy children and a loving husband and a job that I love. It's a job working at Vatican Radio that has introduced me to all kinds of extraordinary people, besides the Pope, of course. And among the prime ministers, presidents, and other power pushers I've interviewed, there are those little people whose big stories are the ones I will never forget. The individuals who struggle daily against injustice, trying in any small way they can to help the less fortunate, the little people whose good intentions in some ways put my own to shame.
Today, when you meet those people who are blind because of the effect of the gas, people who can hardly walk 50 meters because their lungs is forever burned, people, you know, who are fantastically courageous, you cannot help being touched by this.
A giant in the literary world, French novelist Dominique Lapierre was touched by an abyss of human suffering in a land he has adopted and loved as his own, India. Translated into a myriad of languages, his books City of Joy and 5 Minutes Past Midnight in Bhopal both speak of human tragedy and courage in India, selling millions of copies the world over. But despite the millions that means he could be putting in his pocket, it's not a life of comfort and glamour he's seeking. It's justice and the well-being of thousands of Indians who suffered one of the biggest industrial catastrophes of all time. It was 5 past midnight in Bhopal on the night of December 2nd, 1984, when all hell broke loose.
Pesticide plant built by Union Carbide blew up and let loose in the air a gas which is called the isocyanate of methyl, which is probably the most dangerous gas ever invented by the chemical industry, which killed in one night 30,000 people living around the factory and poisoned about 500,000 other people.
What makes this story so incredible is that more than 2 decades after that explosion, tens of thousands of people continue to suffer from the chemical fallout in Bhopal, and little has been done to stop it.
And today, you still have at least 100,000 people still affected by this gas. You still have children being born malformed. You have hundreds of women who have cancers of the cervix and various diseases, who have never been really treated because Union Carbide never revealed the composition of the gas. So no adequate specific treatment have ever been invented. And those people, because they are poor, because they are voiceless, have never been able to receive proper compensations nor medical treatment.
Lapierre has poured royalties from his book 5 Past Midnight in Bhopal into the building of a gynecological clinic which provides free care to hundreds of women there. Women and children, he says, are the truest victims of the disaster.
This gas has really entered into the genes of mostly women. It's like atomic radiation. And so much that we don't know for how many generations this gas will still continue to strike, because it is, as I said, in the genes today.
Of course, it's also in the water supplies and in the soil.
One of the scandalous things that's happening today is that when the explosion took place in 1984, Union Carbide never cleaned the thousands of tons of toxic effluent which remain around the factory. So today, every monsoon, some of those toxic effluents go into the water inside the ground, and this poisons the source of the only water that those people have access to through some wells. And I have, the other day, with my wife, tried to drink one half glass of the water of one of those wells. In a matter of 2 seconds, I had this skin eruption. My throat was burning. It's really unbelievable that these people today, 22 years after the tragedy, could still have as only access to water, the water of those polluted wells.
I barely remember that huge disaster more than 20 years ago, and never hear anything about Bhopal in the press today. Even when more than 100 women from the town march hundreds of miles to New Delhi to start a hunger strike on the steps of Parliament to demand, no, to beg, for what is the most basic human right, clean water.
This walk took more than 2 months. 40 of the women had to abandon along the way because they were sick or badly disabled. After 45 kilometers, most of them had no sandals left, so they continued walking. Some of them were carrying babies in their arm. And they arrived in New Delhi, and they started to picket in front of Parliament with their request. No newspapers have really covered this march abroad or even in India. This is really unbelievable.
Why do you think that there has been so little media attention?
Because nobody cares about Indian victims who are poor. That's a tragedy. When I began researching my book, Five Past Midnight in Bhopal, so many people told me, even in India, but why do you want to tell the tragedy, the story of a tragedy which affected people of the third world? Nobody really care about. Those people, as I said, are poor, voiceless, and no one is interested really in their fate. And that's really something which breaks my heart, to see that in my own country, in France, in Italy, no newspaper, and they have correspondent in India, have mentioned this march, which is really an heroic march. It's led by a gentleman called Satyu. This man is a former engineer. He has given his life to try to improve the lot of those poor victims. It's with him that I've built my gynecological clinic in Bhopal, which treats more than 200 people every day with the most modern equipment to diagnose and eventually to do surgical operation.
Union Carbide came to a $470 million settlement with the Indian government in 1989. But though criminal charges were again reinstated against the company in 1991, nothing has ever come of that. I wondered if Indian authorities ever used that settlement money to clean up Bhopal's water system, and if any of the victims and their families received compensation.
And it's a tragic question because this money has never reached really the victims of this tragedy. Bhopal is a marvelous city, a city of 800,000 people, full of monuments, full of palaces, which really is worth a great visit. I've known people living on the hills above Bhopal, rich people who have received financial compensation for this tragedy when the gas never reached their house. But the poor who lived in the slums, which they built around the factory, never received proper compensation. I don't know where that money is, but it has never been distributed the way it should have. Union Carbide no longer exists. It was bought up by another chemical industry called Dow Chemicals. But Dow Chemicals today say we were not in Bhopal in 1984 when the accident took place. So we have absolutely no responsibility. It would take about $5 million probably to clean the waste, the toxic waste around the factory which pollute all that water. But they don't want to do it. The Indian government is not doing it. the president of Union Carbide has been served by Interpol a warrant for arrest. No one has arrested him in the United States. He is having a peaceful retirement somewhere in Long Island near New York. The Americans don't want to arrest him. The Indians don't want to receive him. Nobody wants to really speak about this tragedy of Bhopal anymore because it doesn't involve important people. You know, all this is so complicated and so sad.
You know, we talk so much recently about corporate morals, corporate ethics. Look at the recent scandals in the financial sector in the United States. And we're also talking about corporate responsibility. What is, in your view, the responsibility of corporations today?
Well, it is to assure a minimum of safety with the plants that they are building. You see, the big mistake was to build such a high-risk industrial plant in the middle of a highly populated city. Bhopal plant, the Union Carbide plant, could have been built 80 kilometers or 100 kilometers away from Bhopal. So if an accident would take place one day, it would not affect so many people. But it was much easier to build this in the heart of Bhopal because you could find labor immediately, cheap labor. You could find electricity. You could find water. So it was really an easy thing to do that. After I published my book, 5 Past Midnight in Bhopal, the French Prime Minister asked for a survey of all the high-risk industrial factories built in France in the middle of highly populated areas. And the results were staggering. More than 700 such plants are built in France. And as a matter of fact, several years after the tragedy of Bhopal, there was a big explosion in Toulouse, in the heart of a big city of Toulouse, which killed a number of people because that plant had been built in the heart of a highly populated area. So I think corporations should put their plant, which are high-risk plants, away from populated areas.
Sure, but let's be realistic here. You're talking about France, where you say just 700 companies are already existing, which might present problems. But you can't expect all those companies to pack up and leave and find another house somewhere else.
You can't, but at least you can prevent new plants to be built in highly populated areas when they are high risk. And one of the results of my book, 5 Past Midnight in Bhopal, I know, is that it has prevented industries to build at least 4 other Bhopal, one in Greece, one in Thailand, one in Bombay, and I think one in South America. So that's at least something that can be done. You see, the extraordinary story about the Bhopal tragedy is that the implantation of this pesticide plant by Union Carbide was a wonderful idea. It was the occasion for a highly technological industry to offer Indian farmers a cheap, efficient, respectful of the environment pesticide, which the farmers need because half of their crops every year are devoured by insects. But what started as a fairy tale turned out to be a nightmare because at some point that factory began to lose money. And when you are in a capitalistic environment, when you lose money, what do? You cut on costs. And which costs are those that you cut first? It's always the safety cost. You realize, I mean, in my research, I discovered that to save perhaps $100 of electricity every day, the Union Carbide plant in Bhopal, in the last months of its life, stopped the refrigeration of the tanks which contained that lethal gas, which was to be kept at 0 Celsius, at 0 degrees Celsius. But just to save $100, they let it... they stopped refrigeration, and the night of the tragedy, it was 14 degrees Celsius in Bhopal.
I suppose it doesn't matter what the temperature is today in Bhopal. The damage is done, and the damage is here to stay until someone, somewhere, listens to the quiet cry of the abandoned poor.
Those people are poor people, very poor. They don't know how to read and write. They don't know how to fill even a form to request for compensation. Those people have absolutely no voice. So their only voice is to start a hunger strike in front of the Parliament of New Delhi, but who cares?
Best-selling French author Dominique Lapierre seems to be one of the few people who does care, not only for the victims of the Bhopal disaster, but also for India's countless other voiceless poor. He has used the royalties from his books to found a humanitarian association to rescue children suffering from leprosy from the slums of Calcutta. He's also worked hand in hand with Mother Teresa, who gave him the exclusive rights to write a film about her life and work with the Missionaries of Charity. Well, there are so many human tragedies in the world today. What, one may say, is one more? What difference can I make? Well, I suppose if you don't try, how will you ever know? Sometimes our expertise and our passions can be put to good use where we least expect. For one thing, Lapierre is desperately seeking women gynecologists willing to offer 1 month of their time to train the Indian staff at his Bhopal clinic. Who knows? Perhaps you, listening to this program, are just the person he's been looking for. Well, if this story has touched your heart, as it has mine, you can write to Lapierre on this email to ask how you can help. The address is capital D.LAPIERRE@wanadoo, that's WANADOO .FR for France. That's capital D.LAPIERRE@wanadoo.FR. And that brings today's program to a close, but we'll be back at the same time tomorrow, so do try to join us again then. Also, you can hear this and other programs, of course, on our website. The address is 105live.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.